watching what it built in front of me is probably an experience I'm always going to remember. I describe it, it's almost like the, you know, the moment that like a monkey discovered fire.
Welcome, Printmasters. We've got Colton from Stay Golden Custom out of Canada, friends up north, today joining us and telling us about his growth story. He's got about 12 people in the shop, and he's doing a lot of things that he is executing from his friends in tech. He's doing a lot of this AI building. He's sharing the tools that he's building in his shop to help people be more efficient. And his team stack, I like to call it, you know, where like, what does the team look like, especially the front of office staff, and how is he breaking it down? He's got three different salespeople too, which I think is more than folks generally have at his size, but it's been a big growth generator for them. So we're going to jump on in. But really quick, we've got a couple incredible partners that help us put this show on every single week. First up is Multicraft Daddy. If you go to Multicraft underscore daddy on Instagram, send him a DM. You guys know the drill. Send him your email address. He is sending gifts out every single week. A lot of PMI tape and a bunch of other stuff that they have at Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies. They've been around for over 50 years helping out this industry grow. They've got top brands at competitive pricing. And if you mention the Printavo Pod and you're a first-time customer, you get an extra 10% off your first order. Stahls, if you are ready to take customer pro to the next level, Stahls is a leader in heat printing solutions. Not only that, use the code HUSTLER20. That gets you 20% off your next DTF transfer order. Stahls is there for equipment and transfers and support for your business. They've also got an incredible amount of events that they've been hosting around the country. Highly recommend participating in that. It's really cool to rub elbows with folks there and the people attending. And they're a they're an incredible vendor in this space that help folks be able to continue to grow, whether you're an established brand or just starting out. Easy Way's monthly giveaway. It's still going on. Go to easyway.com/giveaway. They're giving away product credits worth $250 every single month. Drop in your info. Easy Way makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their system chemicals and equipment. Don't miss that monthly giveaway. It's easyway.com/giveaway. Last but not least, GraphX Source. GraphX Source is a solution to help improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department. To be honest, there isn't a shop now that's not using overseas help to be more efficient in your business. So many of our guests on here are doing that, and GraphX is a huge piece of that. They offer industry-leading outsourcing options and are truly a plug-and-play and a part of your team. You know, they're plugging into Printavo or any other shop management system that you're using. If you're thinking about SEPs, mock-up, creative art, digitizing, back-office admin work, they've been around for 40-plus years. And they work with a lot of shops in our space. So check them out, and we'll jump on into this episode. All right, Colton, now we're actually live. I know you mentioned you've been a long-time listener, which thank you. It's super nice of you to be able to listen. I'm curious, was there anything that, like a big takeaway or a turning point or something helpful from the show that you use in the business?
Yeah, I think what really stands out to me is over the years how your podcast, it wasn't just talking about like, you know, ink and production, that sort of thing, but actually think about kind of like the wider business. And for us, we're from the East Coast of Canada in Atlantic Canada. It's a pretty small region. And for us, like being from a small province, for us, we have to kind of grow outside of our home province and across the region. So kind of looking at what Stephen had done in, you know, the expansion from Champaign to Chicago, that's actually something similar to what we've done in our part of Atlantic Canada. So looking back, the podcast has had a pretty big influence on how our last 5 years has played out.
Sweet. And Colton, so you have, I always mess this up, your main shop is in Halifax? No, your main shop is in Prince Edward Island.
Yeah.
Prince Edward Island.
We're from the East Coast. Basically, I describe it as kind of above Boston, above Maine, home is Prince Edward Island, which is Canada's smallest province. And that's where our shop started and the kind of the first 10 years of our story. And today I'm at our Halifax showroom, which is about 3 hours away. And Halifax is kind of the largest center in our part of the country.
So basically, like, you expanded to Halifax. So you have like a great print shop in a smaller town. You're like, I need to step out of this bubble. So you opened up like a showroom in a bigger city. Congratulations. That's awesome. How long ago did you do that?
So it's been a story of kind of the last 3 years for us, step by step. And the first part of that was for me kind of as the founder to spend a bit more time in the city, to start building accounts and connections here. And it was last fall that we made the jump to actually open our second location here. The idea is kind of a hub and spoke model. We'd like to keep our production centralized to kind of our home province, which is kind of a more rural area. The cost of manufacturing is a bit lower, but we're trying to see if we can build a model that could be replicated in other cities too.
In Canada, have you seen any out of the norm seasonality this year than last year?
You know, so it's pretty interesting for us looking at over the last year, early 2025, I was pretty spooked with, you know, a lot of the talk of tariffs against Canada from the States. But what we actually saw play out last year was actually a really good year for the shop. So we work with a lot of businesses primarily across Eastern Canada, and a lot of those businesses are in some way tied to tourism dollars. So like perhaps if we're making hoodies for a brewery or a coffee shop, it's the tourism dollars that are coming in and people come to visit our region of the country that really drive that growth during the summer. What I think the story of last year was is we still have lots of our American friends coming up to visit us, but a lot of Canadians actually chose to, you know, take their vacation in our part of the country instead. So 2025 was a pretty record-breaking year for us, and it looks like 2026 is actually going to be heading the same direction as well.
Did you do anything different in 2025 from either a marketing or a sales perspective that helped drive that growth? And like, can you give a sense of, well, actually, sorry. First, can you give a sense of the shop size now? And then I'll back into, I'm curious if anything changed last year.
Yeah, so we're 14 years in now. I started in high school and say it's kind of I'm a bit of an accidental entrepreneur because this wasn't necessarily supposed to be the thing. But where we are now, 14 years in, there's 12 of us now. Our main hub is in Prince Edward Island where our head office and our production facility is. And then I'm at our second location. And if things go well, then I think we may have a third location coming in the next year or so.
So do you think, so like, couple million dollars, like you guys are consistently growing. Do you feel like the growth has been, what would you attribute the growth to? If you were to nail one thing, yeah, what would you attribute the growth to?
Or was it just an increase in inbound?
I think it's accumulation of a few things. For us, there's been a few things that made a really big difference. So the expansion, you know, outside of our home province, definitely building strong relationships with a lot of key accounts. We knew that in moving to a bigger city, we'd be running the same process, but the size of the accounts that we'd be servicing would be larger. There's that. Seeing some really interesting results with optimizing our online presence for AI search engines. So I think the stat is within 2 years, more search will be done on AI engines like ChatGPT or Claude than traditional search engines. That's been super interesting to see how that's impacted our inbound. And then also kind of going through a process of, I would say, professionalizing our sales team. So getting, you know, a lot more disciplined about how, you know, we manage our pipeline, how we're following up with customers, the people, the processes, and the systems.
Okay, I want to get into a few of those. How did you optimize this site for AI search? Like, what exactly does that mean? Is there tools that help do that or what?
I got to give a big thanks to our friend Matt Marcotte. I think he's the industry's AI wizard. And it was last October when I came to visit some of you folks in Chicago for Print Hustlers. Matt gave a really great presentation on some specific AI tools. And he actually put a free tool out on ScreenGPT that basically you run the process and you embed some code in your site. And we saw some really, really big gains after that. But it's been accumulation of a few things over time.
Okay, maybe people can find that from Marcotte's, because it's not on his website. So Matt, fix your website, but go to his.
I think if you dig through his Instagram on the ScreenPrint GPT Instagram, it's there somewhere. But it's been interesting. Like it feels in a way like figuring out how to buy Google ads in like 2002, and you know, kind of growing up. Like I'm 31 now. I feel like kind of by the time our shop got to the size that we could spend on Google Ads and stuff, it was already such a competitive marketplace that we were getting outbid. But it's one of those things, it's like within these periods of change, there's some pretty interesting opportunity.
And then Colton, like how much time did you spend, like, okay, you listen to Matt Marcotte, you put this code on your site. How do you start to like measure the success of it? Like, did you just see a ton more inbound starting to come in?
So the lead form that we use on the site where most of our customers are sending in quote requests, I just put like an optional, how did you find us at the bottom? And I think it was something I added maybe a year ago. And honestly, I didn't think anyone would actually even fill it out. But I'm actually surprised by the amount of customers that do. And it, you know, it's one of those things that like, I'm not keeping a spreadsheet of it, but I certainly, when I'm seeing the lead forms come in, and I'm seeing ChatGPT or Claude be listed, it definitely catches my attention.
Interesting. So you're just seeing that more and more, like people found you through ChatGPT or people found you through Claude. Wow. Wow.
Dude, it's pretty crazy. It's funny, I was looking on the Fabric website and like we installed this Yoast SEO plugin for, it's just WordPress. And yeah, they suggested creating this file that helps you be more searchable. And it, I think it did it pretty well, but yeah, yours is probably a lot better, but that's pretty wild. I haven't used AI to help find vendors yet, but it definitely seems to be a popular thing that people are doing too.
Yeah, it's been pretty transformational for us, not just from the search side of things, but in all areas of the business. I would say that this past 6 months has probably been in the last decade, you know, the period of time that I've been the most engaged in the business. You know, we're building our own apps, really changing the way that we work internally. And like, I view it from kind of way of amplifying the impact of the small team that we have.
So Colton, we worked together, what, last fall-ish?
Summer in the fall.
You've done some work with Kevin as well. One of the things that I learned about you really quickly is you are super involved outside of your shop. Like if there was student council president in every club and organization as a professional, you would win the award, but you're also not in your shop a ton. Can you talk about how your business has grown, but then also all the extracurricular activities you do, because it's kind of wild. Bruce, I don't know if you know this about Colton.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long, long road. Our company actually started in our student council office in grade 12. So that's kind of the origin story. I did it on the side during college and then tried to go full time with it in 2014. And I think there's not really any way around it in our industry that you're going to do a lot of time in the trenches. You know, like when I started full time, I was the press operator. You know, I had my heat press and I'm my Roland vinyl cutter. And I was also the sales guy and also the bookkeeper. And, you know, bit by bit, like the team grew first. You know, we had folks to help us with production and then the sales team grew over time and then management. But really where things started to take off was when I was able to step outside of the four walls of the shop and try to start focusing on the bigger plan a little bit. I still spend probably about half of my time in sales, and that's kind of the part of the business that I really like. But increasingly, it's kind of been more systems and processes. A really big inflection point was we have this interesting program in our region called the Wallace McCain Institute. And it's similar to Entrepreneurs Organization, which is kind of a forum group that's all around the world. But they take 15 entrepreneurs from different industries in our region each year. And you do these 12 weekend long retreats at a cool fishing lodge, you know, where they really help you think about the bigger picture and get ready to scale. That was really the point that our story kind of starts to take off. Because it got me out of the shop. It got our team used to kind of, I guess, managing without me kind of in the four walls. They were able to step up and take on more responsibility. I think a lot of the time they're actually glad to have me out of their hair. But it's a really big change when you're not across the room to maybe solve the problem or help with weeding the vinyl. You know, there's a bit of a shift. I'm still accessible. And as we've grown here in Nova Scotia, we have a team member that's joined us and probably more this year. But the nature of the types of tasks that I'm spending my time on are a little bit more high leverage than in the early years when I was still kind of on the production floor.
You said professionalizing the sales team was a big help, especially last year too. And it sounds like that kind of correlates with being able to delegate pretty well. Like, what do you, first of all, what is that your sales team look like? Like, what's the sales stack? And like, then what do you mean by professionalizing? Like, I just think of like helping to write scripts and call scripts and that kind of stuff. But what does that look like?
So our sales team now, there'd be three full-time, and then myself and my operations manager spend about half of our time in sales as well.
And three full-time, what are those roles?
They're account executives.
Okay.
Yeah. And we had the chance to work with Kevin Baumgart from Sales Inc. Academy through the winter. We just wrapped up about 3 months with Kevin. And when I talk about professionalizing the sales team, like, I feel like in the early years, like, we had like customer service, but it was try to kind of have look at other industries, what their approach is to this. And I have friends that work in software sales. So I had the benefit over the years of kind of hearing how they talked about sales and how it worked in their organizations. And we realized, like, coming from a smaller part of Canada, a lot of our growth was going to be outside of our community, outside of our provinces, and even our part of the country. So I thought that it would be really interesting if we could take, you know, some of the process and some of the approach of, you know, how the sales process works in other industries like tech and apply it to what we're doing, which is almost kind of like an agency model for merchandising. So when I say professionalizing our sales team, I think it's just like it's investing in, you know, the right training. Kevin's really great at what he does. Our team really enjoyed the engagement. But yeah, kind of like learning bit by bit of like, how do we do this in, you know, a way that's going to reduce bounce rate, serve our customers the best. And we also say like delight our customers. You know, that's really what we're going for.
What was some of the more things you talked about? So you said you pulled some stuff from a tech companies from Kevin too, but like, what are the some things that really stuck that you implemented that, you know, maybe a shop half a size could start thinking about? Or
and maybe Colton, give us the before and after, right? Like in October, September, what did your sales team do every week? In November, December, what do they do now? How do they operate?
Yeah. And Stephen, like, I give you a lot of credit for this, because some of the systems, like where we've had the most impact are things that we learned from, you know, our time working together in Campus Inc. Like a couple really high impact things. Like, we just have a quick weekly sales call meeting on Tuesday with a very basic format. We start off with a personal best, a business best, you know, the order that we're the most excited about winning this week. You know, we do a little bit of pipeline review. There's a little bit of a learning component. But just syncing up the team so that they're actually talking together. We're discussing what, you know, a monthly goal looks like, and we're tracking our progress towards that. You know, if we rewind a year from now, our salespeople were all kind of operating in the dark. They were, you know, selling their orders and that sort of thing, but we weren't really talking about what targets looked like and that sort of thing. And what we had done is we set that our target each month was going to be 15% growth compared to the same month the year in advance. And it's interesting. It's one of those things that it's like when you start tracking something and also making it very visible and talking about it, then it's interesting how you start to see results. It's almost kind of like when you start, you know, tracking your calories on MyFitnessPal, that sort of thing, you start to see results as well. So just having those weekly sales meetings and doing the cadence, that's made a huge impact. Another thing that, you know, we were able to take from our time working with Steven is it was a concept called Salesland, which was just having our order data flow into a spreadsheet so that we could, you know, basically not at the end of the month, not at the end of the year, but on a daily basis, get an idea of what our sales rate is so far for the month. Like, what's our run rate? What's our average order value? And what we were able to do later after Christmas was actually take that data set that we had flowing into a Google Sheet and actually vibe code with AI an entire app on top of it. So to have that visibility where every salesperson can open their dashboard in the morning and see exactly how, you know, they've done so far this month. They have a pipeline manager tool to track their deals. And then also kind of see that scoreboard so we can celebrate the wins together. Those are a couple of things that have really made a huge impact if I talk about like the last 6 months for us.
Did anyone not make that transition? Did you have to part ways or bring anyone in new out of that three?
No, like I have to give our team a lot of credit. I mean, we're still a pretty small team, all things considered. There's probably about 12 of us with a couple of remote workers in there. But the team is very ready for change. And I think it's one of those things, like, for us, it was never like, you know, if we talk about vibe coding an app to help with the sales process, it's not about replacing someone. It's, you know, I'm able to kind of present it to the team and it's like, hey, like, you know, this part of your job that was the most slow, annoying admin part that was slowing you down, you know, maybe building quotes, we've cut down our speed to quote by about 75% since January. And that allows our salespeople to actually focus on the high value parts of their task, of their job, which is kind of the more human, you know, part of it, which is interacting with their customers.
Steven's gotten you hooked on this AI, huh?
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to get into that after.
But I think what's interesting here is, like, your sales team was showing up, doing their job, doing a fine job, good attitude, effort. Then you started tracking it manually. Like, SalesLand as its own spreadsheet is a very manual process. Yeah, you can flow some stuff in. Yeah, you can use some zaps, but we track it manually every single day. And then the next derivative of that was like, hey, let me feed this to AI and see if I can make a tool. And then, you know, like, it iterated and iterated and iterated. But you weren't afraid to start tracking those things. And I think that was really, really interesting. The other thing, Colton, that, you know, I witnessed was we had a meeting every single week with your operations manager. And the theme of the week was, how do we fire Colton? Colton's not allowed to touch this anymore. Can you talk about that letting go, passing the torch, what you did with him, how that went? Because that wasn't overnight. And I think that's a big part of why you're able to do what you do.
Yeah. And I think it was the right coaching and help at the right time. Because, Steven, when we initially started talking at the beginning of the summer and you asked, when should we do this? My response had been that, like, it always for me had been a Q1, January was when I would try to make these changes. But the thing I had realized last summer was that even though we were busier, I think it was July into October, coming into that period of expansion to open the second location, that's when we needed that help and support. Like, it's been a really interesting transition in the business. And I think it's, you know, it takes a bit of time to, you know, as someone, you know, that's built this over a long period of time and, you know, it can kind of be your baby. I'm really grateful for our team, you know, that they've bought into this vision, that they care about it as much as I do. And, you know, it was only really in, you know, having key team members, like, especially I give a lot of credit to our operations manager, Matt, and our production manager, Porter, who have been with us for quite a while now, to step up into positions of leadership within the main facility so that I could go off to another province to try to build, you know, what looks like the next, at the time, looked like, you know, the potential of the future of the company. But it's like, it's not easy. It's something that, like, that skill of letting go took me years to develop. And Steven, by the time we met, like, I had already had the opportunity through some of the programs like Wallace McCain Institute that I mentioned to start to kind of go through that process and let go, you know, a few years before. And I don't know if, you know, without that help and support, I would have been able to do it. I think it's easy to get trapped into micromanaging, you know, every different component within the business, especially when you're a small shop.
What do you think you micromanage still now?
I think I'm doing a whole lot better. It definitely helps when you're not in the building. And it's almost kind of one of those things. It's the days when I am at the main shop on PEI. Like, I got to catch myself because I'll find myself getting, you know, too far down the rabbit hole in, you know, an order that I should have nothing to do with, all things considered. But in those earlier years, I think it was much harder to give up parts of the sales process because there can be so much nuance. That was trickier to step away from than more basic production, which was I had done years before.
So what you're saying, Colton, is it's still hard today to let go of sales because those relationships you're probably a little, like, crazy about?
I would say it's a work in progress. We use a cool tool that I'm pretty sure I heard about it on this podcast years ago for the first time, called Front. It's a shared email platform where, you know, our account executives can manage their email conversations, and you know, we can chirp in with little comments internally if needed. For the most part, I would say 75% of our customers and that sort of communications, I'm pretty comfortable stepping away on. But it is always kind of one of those things, as, you know, the founder of the company and having certain relationships with customers that maybe go back, you know, years back, key accounts and that sort of thing. It's a step-by-step process. And that's a big project for 2026, is to have more of those handed off to our account executive team to take over.
So how do you make sure that your sales team gives the same level of excellence and care that you would give your customers? Like, how do you actually, and this is just maybe Bruce, you could also answer it. How do you ensure that they're going to be taken really good care of?
I think that comes down, like, that starts at company culture and values, you know, and hiring the people that align, you know. So like, we've got a few big ones, you know, like, it's being the best at getting better. So like, we have this culture of like 1% improvements, but one of our big ones is always delivering on our promise to our customers. And it's on the website, you know, it's in the onboarding manual. For us, you know, a lot of times, like, we can train the skills, and anyone applying to come work with us, there's not necessarily a college program to learn things about our industry. But it's about screening and hiring based on those values, you know, trying to find people that really care about our customers as much as we do and understand that, you know, in a really competitive marketplace, the customers that choose to work with us, that's a really big deal. You know, they pay the bills. And then, you know, kind of through onboarding, you know, we put a big kind of focus on trying to define what, you know, delighting our customer looks like. You know, we have templates, scripts, but then we also, you know, we take the opportunity to kind of review pipeline deals through our sales meetings and that sort of thing, and give feedback. But kind of from a, you know, a perspective that we all want to win together. You know, we've tried to build a system for like our sales team that, you know, when they're successful and when the company's successful, you know, it's all tied together.
Do you look at email threads?
We're working on it for 2026, a lot less than I used to. You know, there was a time back in the day where, like, I would have my eyes on every email.
Because you
could
see it in Front app too, right?
I can, but it's one of those things, I don't think, unless I'm tagged and brought into an email thread that needs my eyes on it at this point, I generally try to leave it to the sales team. But they can easily tag me to have my eyes on something.
Like, I like to still see, hey, are we quickly responding? Hey, why did that one take 3 days to respond, for example? I sometimes like to listen to an occasional call. Is easier in person, and like, cause I could hear it across, you know, room or something like that. A lot harder remote. You know, maybe an occasional support ticket, like, I'll click into it and see how the conversation is going back and forth. And I always feel like there's room for improvement in terms of how that communication level goes. Is that needed? Probably not. And probably bugs me more. But like, Steven, do you still have that? I feel like it's hard to fully not be a little creepy.
Yeah. So I heard this once somewhere that, like, founders, CEOs should live in their support channels, because that's where you're going to learn most about what's broken in the company, right? Like, you need to. So everyone that buys a shirt from us gets an automated email from me that's like a thank you, and also an ask for them to reply back. And I probably get 7 to 10 a week. And I'll go back and forth with them, you know, like, hey, thanks for your order. But then it also allows me to see when things do come up. You know, and then I like to live, for our D2C sales, we use a tool called Gorgeous for our customer support, like returns, things like that. And I like to live in there and just kind of watch and see if I can jump in here and there. I don't stay on the outbound sales side. I'm not really copied into much there. But I do like to kind of keep my ear to the ground. And I think the second you take your ear off that, that's when things can start to get away from you. So, you know, it just like keeps a tighter feedback loop for sure. And like the culture that we have is respond within seconds to acknowledge them, right? It's always when anyone ever sends me a question, my first question is, did you respond to them? don't ask me the question. Make sure you've responded to them first to acknowledge them. If they haven't, I'm not going to answer your question. Go and acknowledge them first. And I'm kind of snippy about it. I'm kind of a jackass, but the culture is like respond as quickly as possible and then follow up with a solution. And then, you know, the other thing is like everyone knows in the company that I do get those support tickets and I do find out when response times go down. And I can't say I'm the nicest sometimes about that stuff. Bruce, doesn't that piss you off?
Let's just say, but you can add so much value by responding quickly to things. And like you said, if you, even if you don't have a solution, that's a really good point. Like, just like, hey, let me double check for you. I'll get back to you soon. Is a huge value add to creating a bond. And especially in a market where people can pick a different solution or go somewhere else. But yeah, I don't know. Colton, do you struggle with that? Or do you like cruise through some of the threads on front or?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's really important to be close to your customer and to have eyes on that. It hasn't been the challenge for me, but I do know of founders, not necessarily in our industry, but when they finally are able to get out of kind of the front lines, they overcorrect, you know, and they're really absent. I love what we do and I'm pretty dialed in. So that hasn't necessarily been the challenge for me. One of the things that I like about Front is we were able to set up some pretty easy automations that, you know, so our SLA service level agreement is a response within 4 business hours at the absolute max. So if that isn't done, then they get a flame emoji, you know, on the thread. And at a certain point, it's gonna then notify other team members, including me. So there is some built-in accountability there. And I really like that idea that you shared, Stephen. I think it comes down to like being close to your customer. What you mentioned about the support channel, you know, how it's like, how as founders do we get the feedback of where the system that we've built is broken? That's really, really important. But trying to find that balance. For me, the balance, naturally I lean towards being too involved. So I haven't necessarily had the opposite, which is checking out too much.
You said you had a couple of remote workers. What are those roles?
Yeah, so we have a bookkeeper, and then we have kind of an admin support that helps us with kind of our e-commerce listings. So I count them amongst the team, but they're remote.
Overseas?
Yeah, Philippines for both of them. And actually, it's a lot of our team in person is also Filipino at the facility in Hunter River.
That's awesome. Can we talk about AI? We're 30 minutes in?
It's the new DTF. Yeah. What are you building, Colton? Or what have you built? What are they actually using?
It's been a wild 6 months. So the real breakthrough for me, it started with a pricing calculator. So we had a V1 of our fancy pricing calculator, which was a Google sheet that we used for more complex quotes that we probably built in maybe 2018. V2 copy of that, I built in 2022 with the help of, he was a developer, but I would almost say kind of a spreadsheet wizard. And that was probably about 4 or 5 months of back and forth and iteration for what was essentially a really fancy Google sheet that was much better at building quotes for us. The V3 version of that calculator is the real breakthrough that I think changed everything in our business. And I have been hacking away at it for a couple months, trying to normalize the data in a way that I could, you know, build a more comprehensive Google sheet. And I think it was the week before Christmas, because we had just wrapped up for the year. We usually shut down between Christmas and New Year's. And I had like a day or so before Christmas. And I had built out this entire PRD, so product requirement document. It's almost kind of like a scope of work that I was going to try to give to someone off Reddit to help me build this spreadsheet. And I had heard some chatter about, you know, Claude Code. I was still primarily using OpenAI at that time, but I also heard about Lovable. And, you know, just by chance, you know, and largely because it was the end of the year and we had closed down the shop, just for fun, I dumped that kind of prompt and everything that I had built in those instructions in Lovable just to see what would come back. And, you know, that following probably 10 to 15 minutes, watching what it built in front of me is probably an experience I'm always going to remember. I describe it, it's almost like the, you know, the moment that like a monkey discovered fire. You know, looking back now, what's happened is, you know, as a non-technical founder, the barrier was always that I couldn't write code, just didn't know how. It was a different language. But the language of coding is now the English language or any other language that you want.
Are you able to share like how the pricing calculator works? Because you said it saves a ton of time on the quoting.
Yeah, so it's a whole app that we've built. It knows the prices of thousands and thousands of SKUs. My team can control every different global markup, every decoration that they want. We have live readouts of margin, you know, commission that may be built in, live exports really quick for estimates. That was kind of the first one, but it was the big aha moment that the limitation for us had always been that, you know, we had a really great software stack, but in many cases there was, whether it was a feature or, you know, something just didn't work quite the way that we wanted to, we never had a solution and we always had to just try to work around it in a way that we were working hard and not smart. That breakthrough with, it started with the pricing calculator and, it was a few days after Christmas before I went on a backpacking trip. I kind of locked in and to see if I could finish it and have it ready for the team when they'd come back from the Christmas break. So when they came back, we were ready to launch and share it. And that kind of started this process over the past maybe 4 or 5 months where an entire world of opportunities has opened up as a non-technical founder, but with 14 years of experience in the business and really understanding, at least for internal apps in our business, what the problems are that have to be solved and exactly for our workflow, how we would want it to work. And realizing finally that, you know, we can build anything we want within reason.
Steven, you are diving deep on the sales side too. There was mention of sales land.
Yeah, I call it whenever I work with a shop, we develop different lands. We have production land, sales land, financial land, and they're usually just spreadsheets that I start with and we daily track on it. It's just kind of a signature of mine, I guess. I am neck deep in AI right now, vibe coding. I'm building on the Printavo API, which, like, PSA, shops that think they're turning into a software company that are going to start supporting a tool for other shops, build it for yourself first, because software is really, 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 really hard when you try to scale it. But we've taken Printavo as our chassis, added a layer, basically using the API with a tool called Replit, connected the two together, connected like SNS Activeware APIs. And I think I'm hitting my token limit. Like, I could be spending $50 to $100 a day in usage tokens right now. Because this is the future. This is the future. So I'm essentially building something that Colton has done for our team to use. That's just like way more curated for just us. Yeah, I'm neck deep in Claude Code and Replit right now.
And Steven, that's pretty similar to the approach we've taken. Like, I think the Printavo's Inksoft, or in our case, we've used Deco Network. That underlying chassis is really important. And I don't see a situation where we would ever want to risk trying to replace that, because that is the universal source of truth. But it's the question is, like, what can we build on top of that that's hyper-customized for our team? There's a really good quote that stuck out to me from Naval, who's one of my favorite kind of venture capitalists and philosophers. I think it was Steve Jobs had said that the personal computer was going to be the bicycle for the mind to help us move faster. And what Naval said, he described, you know, AI and vibe coding as the motorcycle for the mind. You know, it's like if you have the idea and you can, you know, kind of the systems thinking of how a user experience and a workflow would work, finally, you know, with the English language, we can build and code in a tool like Lovable, Replit, Claude Code.
What consumes your time, Colton? What do you think about a lot?
What's living rent-free in my head? A lot of AI stuff right now. I think this period that we're living through is akin to like the invention of the internet. It's going to change everything. I would say that this winter has probably been the time that I've been the most engaged in what we're building in probably a decade. It's a kind of a plethora of opportunities for us that are starting to open up and trying to kind of define what the future looks like. We're growing pretty quick and just trying to, I guess, always manage and balance, like, what do we want that future to look like? What's a responsible pace of growth that we're not trying to scale too quick and taking too many risks? You know, and putting the team in place and just taking it step by step.
Can we talk about AI adoption for a couple seconds? How much of an AI bug has your team caught on to? Are you still like leading the charge, or is the rest of the team starting to build and work in it and use it every day?
I'm certainly leading the charge. And when we talk about tools that are kind of being built and deployed within the business, that's where I'm spending most of my time, starting to see that trickle down. And our operations manager, Matt, we have kind of similar to EOS, we have a couple rocks, you know, which are kind of projects for each quarter. And he's now kind of stepping up with some projects like this as well. But it's interesting because we can look at any one of our roles in the organization and pick out things, you know, whether it's just basic data entry or copying information over, that, you know, it's prone to error. No one really wants to do it. It's not the fun part of the job, but we can now point at each one of these as a quarterly project and talk about how can we build a system that this just kind of runs in the background and we can focus on the more high value tasks. One that we're working on now is custom names and numbers, you know, on the back of jerseys, to build a system that will basically lay those out in Illustrator for us, just from text inputs. So like, what would our heat press operator's job look like if he never had to line up a name or number again, if it was all just pre-printed for him DFT?
So, at the beginning of the year, we do a monthly call with our entire team. And on every single call, I'm talking about AI. We did an AI sprint for 30 days in January. And I had a slide on there that said, AI won't replace your jobs, but someone that knows AI will. And that was kind of my like declaration that I put out, like planted a thing in the ground. And it's crazy to see who has adopted it and who's still hiding it from it. But my next declaration is, if you haven't adopted it in the next 90 days, you probably won't work here anymore. Is that too bold?
Is it too bold? I think when you look back on that statement in a year, I would say no. Just because if you think about hiring someone, especially that's working front of office type of work, if they're not starting to play around with stuff or very open to learning and want to pick it up quickly, I would say it's not a good fit. It's like back in the day of not knowing like, you know, a Microsoft product or something. It was like, wait, I got to teach you Excel and you like, and then we get into this job. So I think so.
Yeah, I'm sort of the camp where I'm done fighting it. And, you know, there's either two routes you're going to take. It's you're going to catch the bug or you fight the bug. And if you're going to fight the bug, go tell another company that I didn't want to use AI and I want to work here. I was interviewing an artist yesterday, like senior in college, super talented. And he started the conversation, was telling me how he doesn't use AI a lot and he wants his art to be all this and that. And I'm like, no. Tell me about everything you do in AI. Because if you're not willing to use the best power tools, then I don't want you on our team. And he's like, Oh, and it's just funny. It's like, you know, we have to be building our teams around people that actually want to adopt it. And I mean, Anthropic just released something with Claude Code that integrates with Adobe yesterday. Did you guys see this? Controls your Adobe Illustrator? Yeah. Claude will now work with your Adobe suite, which is just wild, right? And it's like, yeah, I'm almost to the camp where I'm not going to fight it anymore. And what's really cool is when an employee gets the bug. When an employee catches the bug and you get a late night Slack message being like, Steven, look what I just built. Look at this thing. It's freaking nuts. Like, sit back and just let them cook, you know, because
I got one of those over the weekend.
Yeah, they now have figured it out. But I think as owners, you need to surround yourself with people that are, if you're not learning it every single day, you're getting passed up. Like, you need to be spending a lot of time in it and you need to be open to whatever platform. I have Claude Code. I have OpenAI. I have Replit. Like, I'm using all of them. I'm using Gemini because I'm just trying to understand them every single day. I'm surrounding myself with friends that are drinking the Kool-Aid. Me, Justin Lawrence, and Matt Marcotte are in a Slack channel or in a text thread. And that's all we do. In our Fabric group, we have a Fabric channel just on AI. And then you need to try and get more people on your team to really get used to it. And it can be your production team too. Two of my production employees have actually caught on the hardest. And one just developed a tool to create barcodes for us easier. Right. And so it's like, it has to be a movement. And you have to be super, super, super intentional about it.
Holy cow. That's crazy.
I was going to say part of that comes back to just like a culture of constant, you know, self-improvement. And like, that's kind of what we've tried to build. It's those 1% improvements every day, you know, in areas like AI or other areas that really over a long period of time compound into huge changes.
This is great. Colton. Okay. Last question. I hope I'm not ending on a bad note. What was a large mistake you feel like you've made in the last, you know, that you can recall that you may have corrected it, I'm sure, and moved on, but something that stood out as, ah, shoot, that was the wrong direction.
If I think back, the area that I've struggled with that, you know, I'm really trying to put a lot more focus on is having those difficult conversations sooner and quicker. The biggest areas where we didn't nip an issue in the bud, you know, whether that was a issue with the vendor or team member, it's getting ready to have those challenging conversations sooner rather than later. I have a friend that calls it eating the frog first each day. But that's the area that, you know, if I look back over the years was definitely a challenge for me. And I think that putting a bit of a focus on that for 2026 has made a really big difference.
I like it. Direct combos. I definitely agree with that. I've got a post-it note here. Set expectations and have direct conversations. I love it. Colton, thank you so much for being able to join us on this episode of Print Hustlers. Absolutely. And we appreciate you guys joining us every single week. We'll see you on the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications. If you enjoyed this video, if you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.